Well, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever to you. Today's Tuesday, April 11th, 2006. You're listening to the Bud the Teacher podcast. I am Bud the Teacher, coming to you today at around 6:30 p.m. Mountain Time, at the end of a beautiful sunny day, driving up I-25, the gateway to the Front Range. I have mountains on my left, I have plains on my right, and I have traffic all around. Podcasting today from the brand new Bud the Teacher podcasting studio. You might recall that our previous studio suffered a bit of an accident back in December. Went into a ditch, lost the car. I wasn't podcasting at the time, no. But anyway, was without a car for several months, and now I am podcasting to you from the Toyota Prius of my dreams. My geeky dreams. I'm flying up the road at an average consumption rate of 47.4 miles per gallon and loving every minute of it. Yeah, that's about all I need to say about that. Been kind of quiet. I've taken a couple of weeks or a week and a half, coming up on 2 weeks, I don't know, off from being online, in large part because it was spring break and I needed a break. So I took one, and I'm fairly certain my family wanted me to have a break too. Enjoyed the time away from the computer. Spent it with my daughter, mostly at the park. My wife joined us when she could. She was working in her district over that time, but really was nice to take a break, except for one small problem, and that's one of the two foci, I believe the math folks would ask me to say, of today's podcast. The first being the recent Washington Post story about bloggers and blogging, or the package of stories. The second being, I've got some tech frustration with district folks. And if there's time, and if I feel so inclined, I'll give you an update on my next student blogging project. Anyway, yeah, I announced that I was going to take about a one-week break from the blog, and gosh, it wasn't 24 hours after that that my blog was quoted in a Washington Post story on teachers and blogging. That was kind of cool. It was great. Suddenly I had a ton of traffic from the Washington Post, and then suddenly I had a bunch of traffic from MSNBC as well, because they share content and a bunch of other things. They're owned by the same people, I believe, or they have a network relationship. To be honest, I don't exactly know what the relationship is, but I'm fairly certain there's some ownership arrangements there. Anyway, it was a mixed blessing. It was a good thing to get a little bit of publicity for the blog. However, I was very excited at first. Said, wow, I'm in the Washington Post. That's great. Went around to a couple of newsstands to try and see if I could get my hands on a print copy of the article. The online version, I had a link in two places. One was a list of notable educational blogs. That was an honor. There were some really smart people on that list, some blogs that I read and admire. I was tickled to death to be included with them. There was also a passage of text from my blog in one of the stories. I think it was the main story on how blogs are a new form of teacher's lounge. And I didn't really think too much about that at first. The first thing I thought was, wow, traffic. Gosh, I have a sudden glut of audience. I better say something worthwhile. So I posted a quick, hey, thanks for checking out the blog message that included some links to for teachers and for parents. Just some stuff I thought, hey, maybe you're checking this out because you're interested in online safety, or maybe you're checking this out because you want to blog with your students. So threw some links up there, hopefully led some people in the right direction. I did receive a few comments and some email that I did help them move in the right directions. That was good. But after I calmed down a little bit and wrote that post, I read the article a little more closely. Always something you should do. And it turns out that basically I was I was the poster example of why teachers leave the profession in 5 years. The quoted passage was some of my frustration with my district in getting a mobile laptop lab set up so that I can have reliable computers that my students can be on regularly enough so that we can actually try to create a blogging habit in school. A lot of my students don't have time or access at home, and I think a writing habit is a good habit, a blogging habit is a writing habit, so I want to be able to foster that. But I found that you cannot encourage students to blog in a meaningful way if you don't have access to computers on a regular basis. And my post was about, the quoted piece was about my frustration and how some of the teachers I've worked with have gotten frustrated, and the text around my post was essentially, this one of the many reasons, see one of the many reasons why teachers leave the profession within 5 years. While the article may very well be true, I was disappointed with the spin on blogging that it took. It made it sound like we're basically venting on the web in plain view, and that's not quite true. There are a lot of educational blogs that do that. It's a free country. People should speak their mind however they wish. However, I've tried very carefully not to make my blog a place for venting as much as I'd like to some days, for a couple of reasons. One, I honestly believe that there are more constructive ways to get work done. For another, I don't like the tone of some blogs that have gone that route, the anonymous snarky tone. If you've read a lot in the blogosphere, you know what I'm talking about. And I wrote very early on as a blogger, a year and a couple of months ago now, about my distaste for anonymity on a blog. I have never thought it's a good idea to take an anonymous position in regards to your everyday life or your professional statements that you might make, because there's really a sense that, particularly in our profession, you can argue about the necessities of anonymity online elsewhere, and I know there's value to it because I ask my students to mask their identity somewhat, but anyway, I find that when you get the mask of anonymous as a professional or as somebody commenting on their work environment, it very quickly gets snarky and negative and look at how dumb they are or look at how irresponsible this is or blah, 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 blah. I just don't care for it. I'm not articulating that as well as I think I should, but if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know what I'm talking about. I just don't like that, and my work was featured as one of those anonymous voices, even though there was a link to me, and if anybody that linked found that that's not really what my blog's about. Although I do post my frustrations occasionally, because that's part of my teaching profession. But I'm very careful not to just blindly complain. For one, the people that I'm complaining about, you got to always assume they're paying attention, even though in the case of that post, it saddens me to say that I don't think they are. And I'll let you riddle that one out on your own in terms of more context or details. But another reason is it's just I don't like to read that all the time. Occasionally, it's interesting to follow stories, see frustrations, share those. And I do think sharing frustrations is important. Sharing missteps is important. All of that is important sharing to do. And I tried to say that just before I went off and took my break. I didn't say that very well. I'm doing a good job of not doing my job very well as a writer lately. But hence the podcast. A time to clarify and extend my remarks. Anyway, found the Washington Post piece to sort of put me in the venting category. A little more than I would have liked. But for a lot of people, they got a profile of some other educational bloggers. I believe Will Richardson was one. Of course, you got to read Will. Of course, he went ahead and took a break too right after the Post piece ran, and he got his blog transferred to WordPress. Hooray. Hooray for him. hope he gets some good rest. Will, if you're resting enough or not resting enough to not touch the podcast, and you're hearing this, I hope you're enjoying your break. You've earned one. Come back strong. Come back in a hurry, but take all the time you need. I have this idea that maybe Will and Stephen Downs are just getting together and playing cards and talking about all of us that don't quite get it. Maybe John Peterson is hanging with those guys too. I hope so. Haven't heard from him in a while. Anyway, I digress, as people tend to do when they podcast. I found the piece not as positive as I would have liked, but I appreciated the attention. It's nice to get read. That said, I'll move on to the second piece. I have been doing some reading as I've slowly gotten back up to speed, and some things have been going on in my continuing quest to get laptops working and going for my students. Not one-to-one, but we're trying to get like a 1-to-2 ratio going in our school, which, or it might even be 1-to-3. It's somewhere in that 1-to-2, 1-to-3 range, which I think is really, really, really important. I don't know that every kid needs a computer all the time, because I just don't think we have the money for it. I wish we did, but I sure do think you need enough computers for kids to have meaningful, regular access. And it's just one thing after another. I submitted a request for some software to be put on the machines that I bought in December and have been in my district in January and aren't being delivered until May. I put a request in for some software on those, all free, all open source software, and the response I got was not super. One program, Firefox, it was a no-brainer. They've installed it on other machines. They put it on mine. Great. Excellent. Two programs that I want to be using, and some other people in my building have taken an interest in. We're not... there's more hurdles to go through. The first is Google Earth. That request was denied because of some district technology people's concerns over bandwidth. They say it takes too much. I wouldn't disagree that it takes bandwidth, but a couple of questions. One, are any of you out there using Google Earth in your district? How does that work? Are you finding it's a bandwidth hog? Another question, those of you who are district technology people, how much bandwidth do you need? How much is enough? What's the deal there? How do you get more in an affordable manner? I don't know the answers to those questions. It's scratching sort of the edges of what I understand, and I need some assistance. It's a really neat free program that gives my students access to an awful lot of information that they can't get anywhere else in my school. We don't have a library. We don't have a large reference material section. We don't even have a lot of world maps around. I've got a free solution to put on computers that have hard drive space and are available. What's the deal? Help me out. The real frustrating thing about Google Earth being disallowed, I believe was the word that was used, is that there's no master list somewhere of this stuff that's written down or easy for me. So I have to guess and ask and then wait to hear back and then see if I was okay. And then sometimes it's all right and sometimes it's not. And there's no real clear guidelines. And I'm guessing that some school districts have figured this out really well. If you are, again, one of those district technology people and you will tell your teachers what is and isn't allowed, I'd love to know what you have to say about it. I'm thinking here about the reading I was referring to earlier. Doug Johnson posted, I don't know when it was because I'm behind, I think in the last week and a half, about how he's contemplating putting together some resources in his district or a district that he works with, some people that he works with, talking about a guy named George he knew that used to run a computer lab. He said the best way to keep the machines running smoothly was to keep people from using them. I'll say that again because it drives me nuts. The best way to keep machines working is to keep people from using them. He also mentioned a librarian who said that best way to keep the books in order is to keep kids from taking them off the shelf, you know? And that's true. The best way to maintain a neat stack of resources that is quite utterly useless, but it really looks good, is to make sure nobody's involved in them. But I'm starting to feel like that's what my school district's philosophy is on computer use. And I know that's not their intent. I know I said earlier I don't like venting, and I'm trying not to vent. I would love to just say that they're awful people and they don't have any good sense and they have no feelings and they have no hearts. But I know that's not true. They're nice guys, smart guys, useful, helpful. They're just real busy, and I don't know if they know some of what it is that I'm trying to do, and I don't know if I haven't communicated that very well or what. But anyway, I really started thinking about that George mentality that Doug Johnson was talking about, and that sort of evolved into a discussion with, I believe, Wes Fryer and Miguel, is it Ullian? I need to learn how to pronounce that too. And speaking of, thank goodness my name isn't Kuropatwa. Apparently that's the hardest to pronounce name in the edu blogosphere right now. Sorry, Darren, I hope I just did it right, but anyway, the conversation evolved into one of discussing the idea of experimentation in education. And I really latched onto that as I was thinking about why it is I want a program like Google Earth on my computers. Do I have one specific purpose that I need this program for? The immediate answer is no, I don't. I don't have an immediate purpose for the dictionaries that I have on the wall of my classroom, but I make them available to students when they need a dictionary. Why aren't we treating our computers the same way? I see these school computers, and maybe this isn't the case in your district, but we have computers that have a ridiculous amount of memory and hard drive space. Well, more hard drive space than memory. And most of that hard drive space sits blank and unused. Why aren't we filling that up with calculators and software and tools, educational games, Google Earth, the other program that I'm trying to get, or I'd like to get, and I have to get that approved through the district, which I understand, is a program called Celestia, which is an astronomy program, a planetarium program, really neat astronomy planetarium program. It's kind of like Google Universe without the photographs, but it's a neat program that some of our physical science students were using to explore the solar system for an astronomy project. I found a way to get that to work on the machines, and we played around with that. The students explored, they learned. It's a very intuitive program. They picked it up very quickly. But basically, you can go anywhere in the known universe with that tool, either in real time as a traveler. You can basically fly through the sky, or you can instantaneously travel there. You can look at moons, you can look at rotation, you can speed up time, you can slow down time, you can look at several different points in space at the same time, so you can look at the Earth from the moon, you can look at the Earth from the sun, you can look at it's a great program. I'm losing my train of thought. But my point is, I wonder if, I really have lost my point. Let me back up. Educational experimentation. Doug Johnson suggested that perhaps, and I may misstate this a little bit, this is my interpretation of what the conversation has been, stated that the MAVE schools aren't the place to do experimenting. And Wes Fryer responded back, and I believe Miguel did as well, that whoa, good teaching involves some experimenting. Because it's part art, part science. Maybe it's all art, maybe it's no science. Some folks said, oh, no, teaching is an art. Other folks said, no, teaching is a science. I fall somewhere in the middle. There is a lot we can learn from systematic study of teaching and social behaviors and sciences and whatnot. But yes, there are some art factors. a particular person has a particular style that on a certain day with the right people and the right wind conditions and the right phase of the moon requires a different approach than it would on the same day with different kids or all those things. So there's art and science involved. Do we need to be experimenting on children? No. Should we be experimenting with children? Of course we should. We should be helping them to experiment as well. The best thing we can do in a school is to make somebody curious. Best thing we can do is to just make them curious. If you can teach somebody to be actively curious, you're done, because you can figure out all the rest. It's just details. Somebody who's curious enough to know MLA style will learn MLA style. Somebody who's curious enough to know how genes work will figure out RNA and DNA and ribosomes and mitochondria and all that. Somebody who's curious can figure out why calculus is so dead-blamed important. Anyway, I'm losing my point again. You can tell I haven't written or spoken to you in a while. I feel so full of stuff. But try to wrap this up a little bit. I feel like educational experimentation, backing up to the request to approve software. The request to approve this Celestia program requires a specific educational purpose for software. What is it I want them to do, and how does that meet standards? Well, I can't find "you need to be curious" written explicitly in standards. I can find specific science standards that would match this program, but Google Earth, I couldn't. I mean, I don't have a specific geological project. I just know that sometime in the next year and a half to 2 years, I'm going to want to fire up Google Earth and show my students something. Right now, there's a lot of resources being built into that software. Discovery recently announced that they're going to plug video in, because Mayo has recently announced that, Discovery and Cosmere are the same thing. The National Geographic folks have had neat plug-in videos in there for a long time. It's a great resource. It's getting better. The community's adding to it. I don't have a "on Thursday we will examine the literary qualities of Asia." Okay, I don't have that in my curriculum right now, but I might one day. And we've got the computers sitting somewhere where they can easily be updated with something that isn't really all that hard to do. Why aren't we doing it? Should we be experimenting on children? No. Should we be experimenting with technology? Yes. I'm rambling into a free-for-all, but if you're a thinker, or perhaps if you're a non-linear thinker, you're staying with me. Those really smart people are having this argument about whether or not we should be letting teachers experiment with the computers by adding software, taking off software. I understand the desire to lock down a network, to keep it safe. It's the same desire that we have to lock down our children and keep them safe. Locking them down doesn't do much good with children. It may with a network, because you can at least manage it. The problem I see is that when it gets too rigid and too few hands are involved in the process, you are creating something that is no longer useful for anyone at all. So, districts, if you've got Google Earth, help me. I want to figure out a rationale to get it onto these machines in my district. If you manage a network, please explain to me how the bandwidth thing works a little bit more. If you are still listening to this podcast, you're a wonderful person, very patient and kind and good and noble and just, and probably on a long drive and have run out of other things to listen to. But I don't mind. I appreciate you riding with me. Appreciate you getting frustrated with me. I'm back. I'm eager. I'm hungry. I got lots to say, hopefully in a more organized fashion on the blog. Please, if you're in a position of power over a computer network, be the guy who says "why not" instead of "why." And I mean that in the other way that you might think. I get the sense that we're closing things down in my area just when it's starting to get interesting. That said, I'm going to call it quits. Thank you for listening. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. If you made it through and it made sense, please drop me a comment on the blog at budtheteacher.com. If you made it through and it didn't make sense, do the same thing. Send me an email at budtheteacher@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking with you again. I hope you're doing good work, and I hope you're looking after each other. Take care.